Love that, Jim Garlow. That's a great book, by the way. Well-versed. I had a chance to talk to Jim about that a couple weeks ago, something that every Christian should pick up. I think it will be very helpful to you in making all of your life decisions and certainly how you interact with culture and the political sphere and all that good stuff. Great advice from Jim. Well, it's Bill Meyer here with you. I'm joined by Dr. Kent Kaiser. He's the chair of the communications department at the University of Northwestern in St. Paul. You started your new classes last week, I think?
Yeah. We did. We've been at it for a week already.
Yeah, and the students are, they're staying awake in Kent's class, which is good, because he walks over with a ruler and whacks them if they don't. No, you don't.
And I start at 7:50 in the morning.
Yeah, so they better be alert. So we have a bit of a feud between a quarterback and a presidential candidate. We've talked about Colin Kaepernick's decision not to stand for the national anthem. He's protesting what he believes is the bad treatment of African-Americans in this country. What did Mr. Trump have to say about that, and how did Colin respond?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think the whole issue, I think Colin obviously is really wrong. He's picked the wrong venue for this. I mean, and especially today, when you look at who he is as an athlete, how much money he makes, how blessed he's been to be in this country. And Trump makes that point. I think we have a clip of Trump's actual response to it.
I think it's personally not a good thing. I think it's a terrible thing. And, he'll maybe he should find a country that works better for him. Let him try. It won't happen.
And what a great response, I think, from Trump. I mean, and probably the kind of response that every American, you know, every patriotic American would like to give. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of people love Trump. Just he'll say what most people are thinking. And in this case, really, Colin has picked the wrong venue. You know, when he's wearing the uniform of his team, he's representing that team. If this were, like, let's say he were a spectator at some other sport or something, and he was on his own time, it would be one thing to disrespect the flag and the military and everything behind it. And many military people and military families have obviously criticized him for sitting during the national anthem, and rightfully so. If it had been during his free time, then maybe it'd be different. But there he is representing his team. Personally, I think he's going to get cut because he's not been doing very well.
Yeah,
so, there's that too. And of course, he'll blame it on this political stance that he's taken. But in reality, he's just not been performing well.
Hmm. Meanwhile, there is a controversy brewing over American flags at high school football games in South Carolina. What's the background on that?
Well, this is interesting. There's been a high school that has banned people from bringing the American flag to the games.
Why, pray tell?
I know. Supposedly people are using it to shield or to hide behind the flag when they are, doing things that are unsportsmanlike from the stands. Now, I don't know whether, exactly what they're talking about. Nobody ever really articulates exactly what's happening in the stands. But I can't imagine that everybody who brings an American flag is doing something unsportsmanlike. And not only that, but if there's unsportsmanlike conduct from the fans, why, then that's the thing that should be addressed, not the fact that they're hiding behind a flag. I think there's a real First Amendment issue here, especially because this is taking place at a public school. And there would be, public schools participating. And I think I think it's just a lawsuit waiting to happen.
So something's going on behind the flag. I mean, they're eating nachos. What are they doing? I mean,
yeah, see, that's the thing. Nobody's really articulated that. And I suppose that they're throwing epithets at the opposing team or something.
Okay,
I don't know.
Okay.
Nobody said that they're swearing or anything.
But it's the kids. It's the high school kids themselves bringing the flags
in. That's correct.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I mean, when I was in high school, we did some pretty nutty things, but never tried to hide behind the American flag. So.
Well, right. And again, I mean, If there's some kind of unsportsmanlike conduct taking place, I mean, that can even be a call from the field.
Hmm. Did Trump weigh in on this as well?
Well, I have not heard Trump weigh in on this one. I suspect I know where he would fall.
I think we both do. So getting back to the presidential election, it appears just in the last week or so, things have tightened up a bit in the polls. Now that's the national polling. Does that hold true in the important swing states that Donald Trump needs in order to win the election?
Some of the swing states have tightened up, and this has been very interesting all along. Trump will fall down a little bit and then come back up within about 2 or 3 points of Clinton in the national polls, and even in some of the swing states. Some of the swing states, there's still a bit of a gap. But it seems like he gets a little bit of momentum and then something happens and he falls back. He gets a little bit of momentum and then he falls back. And it'll be interesting to see what happens right around election time. Some people are saying that there's maybe 2 or 3% of underpolling for Trump because there's more to the movement. That he's got a more energized base and more energized kind of grassroots than Clinton does. And if that's the case, that could make the difference in the election. I don't know if I believe that it's 2 or 3%, but even if it's 1 or 2%, if he gets just enough momentum before Election Day, and all that it would take for that to happen would be a terrorist attack or some other sort of catalytic moment where all of a sudden people say, you know what, it's time for change. It's time to take that sort of leap and go with Trump rather than staying kind of with the same policies as we would if we were to choose Clinton.
Now, the flip side of that is the debates. And I've seen some stories saying that Hillary's debate team, the prep team, is actually doing a lot of research on Trump's background. They're talking to, what's the guy's name, Tony Schwartz, the guy that wrote the kind of the tell-all or the right. positive book, and now is saying he shouldn't have done that. But they're trying to find dirt on Trump that hasn't come out in the media, and that she may use that in the debate setting to try to get under his skin. And we've certainly seen many incidents where people have gotten under Trump's skin and then the reaction is not so pretty. And they're hoping on the debate stage to rile him up enough so he loses it. I mean, that's a pretty, I guess it's a good strategy, but it's a little devious as well.
Well, it is a little bit devious. I think he's going to come in with the same kind of a strategy for her. I think that probably the Clinton team is really more shaking in their boots than the Trump team is. I think he's shown that he can throw a lot of people off kilter in a debate. I mean, even if we just think back over the last year or so, when you think low energy, we automatically think Jeb Bush, and that came from a debate. And it's just these little one-liners that Trump will get in. Little Marco, you know, he has these little lines that he can throw in there, and I'm sure he's going to come prepared with any number of lines like that for Clinton. I think that we can expect for him to be calling her old, essentially, even though they're about the same age, that she's probably tired, all kinds of other things. You can just see that happening. And, of course, if they're going to be digging for dirt, you can dig back like what the last 20 years and every Clinton policy has turned out to be kind of a disaster, especially in the foreign affairs field. So
there's plenty of dirt there. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. When's the first debate, by the way?
Oh, I don't even know.
We'll keep track of that. I think it's three, and we'll update you on those debates. And, of course, we'll cover them, give you analysis afterwards. Our guest is Dr. Kent Kaiser from the University of Northwestern. We'll take a quick break. Be right back on the Faith Radio Network. Welcome back. It's the Faith Radio Network. 47 past the hour as we get you going on a Wednesday. Bill Meyer with Dr. Kent Kaiser from the University of Northwestern. The election, less than 70 days away. I'm trying to think of like 68 days. Come on.
Most of us can't wait. I don't know how many days it is.
Yeah, but it's not that far away. And if Trump is not able to pull ahead, you've made the point that it doesn't necessarily spell doom for the Senate and House Republicans. That's because we have a history of what we're called split tickets in this country. Explain what that is, Ken.
Well, I think that people do look at the races independently. I think especially this year they look at Trump as an entity of himself. I think he's a one-off. No, people are saying, oh, he's going to ruin the Republican Party. I don't think that people really attach the Republican Party brand to Trump. He's a brand unto himself. And so if candidates are losing down ticket, like for U.S. Senate or U.S. Congress or lower, it's their own fault. Mm. Now, ticket splitters are interesting. What they do is they prefer not to have one-party government, which is so different from many of us activists. You know, we just want our party to win so that we can be in control. But ticket splitters prefer for there to be sort of a check and balance in government so that if the presidency is held by one party, they want the Congress held by a different party. And you can certainly see the wisdom of that in terms of slowing down any kind of legislation, whether it's conservative or liberal. That certainly happened over the last several years with the Obama administration having a Republican Congress to deal with. Thankfully, we've been able to stop some kind of crazy liberal legislation that might otherwise have gone through, which wasn't the case, for example, with Obamacare. There was one party rule at the
right.
time.
And pushed a lot of stuff through.
Went through with no Republican support, but they were able to because we had one party government for a while there. Well, ticket splitters look at that and they think we should have this check and balance. And so they think, well, if it looks like Hillary Clinton is going to win the presidency, then they are specifically going to vote for the Republican U.S. Senate candidate or U.S. Congress or even lower. They'll vote for a Republican even on, lower on the ticket because they want that check and balance. I've actually seen this. I can remember a time in Minnesota when we had a change of a candidate at the top of the ticket for U.S. Senate. That was the top race that year. And that Senate candidate died and another candidate was put on the ballot. And I had people, when I was working at the Secretary of State's office, actually call up and say they wanted to re-vote with their absentee ballot, which you're allowed to do in Minnesota. And because they had made one choice and now they thought somebody else was going to win that top seat, and so they wanted to vote differently down ticket. So I've actually heard people say that. Now, again, to those of us who are activists either on either side, we just would love one-party rule. But there are those people who foil our attempts at that by splitting their ticket.
Interesting. Who are the Republican senators right now who are most vulnerable? I know we have one in Wisconsin, Illinois, New Hampshire. And how close are those races right now?
Well, those races, if you're looking at the polling, some of them aren't that close. I'd say New Hampshire looks like it's fairly close. But Wisconsin, honestly, looks like it would be a tough one for the Republican candidate, Senator Johnson, to maintain that seat, especially because he's really up against another, what you might call incumbent, because it's the former senator who's coming back to try and retake the seat. There are some other closer races to look at. Even John McCain, who's been in the Senate for a long, long time from Arizona, is going to be in a tough, close race. And he had actually a primary challenge. Marco Rubio had a primary challenge in Florida, but came through it just fine last night.
Big time, yeah.
I think he's probably safe for reelection. But it will be interesting to see now in some of these states. The Republicans have more to lose because the Republicans have the majority. And so if they can afford to lose a couple of seats and still will maintain the majority, and I think that's probably going to happen, we could wind up with a wave. But again, these ticket splitters, if they see that Hillary Clinton's going to win, might very well save Senator Johnson in Wisconsin and Senator Ayotte in New Hampshire and others because they might be just that close that the ticket splitters are the ones who make the difference.
Any incumbent Democrats who are in danger right now?
You know, I can't think of any offhand.
I guess Nevada, because Reid is going out, so that could change hands.
That's the only one because it's an open seat. That's the only one I can really think of offhand.
Hmm. Very interesting to keep our eyes on these Senate races. If the Senate were to fall into the control of the Democrats, what does that mean for if Hillary Clinton wins the election? All speculative right now. If Hillary Clinton wins the election and the Democrats have control of the Senate, I'm assuming that means free and clear for whatever judicial candidates that she nominates, whether it's the Supreme Court, federal courts, they're all getting in.
That is true. If Hillary Clinton wins and there's a Democratic U.S. Senate, then we can count on the U.S. Supreme Court being liberal for generations to come.
Because it's not probably just one vacancy. There might be one or two others that are aging that would retire during that time.
That's right. And they could very well be on there for 20 or 30 years or something like that. It would be terrible.
If the Republicans remain in control of the Senate, how much power will they have to stop some of her? Or is she going to have to put in some stealth nominees that really, they don't have a justification for blocking that nomination?
That's right. She'd have to put through stealth candidates or, somebody who was sort of moderate. They would probably be able to be they would have to have a judicial record where they looked like they had really been fair. And I think that she would be able to come up with some of those candidates. But she certainly wouldn't be able to get by with some of the more strident liberal choices that perhaps Obama has been able to put onto the court.
As we wrap things up, Billy Graham has weighed in on the presidential election. He's, 98 now, I think?
Yeah, 97, 98. Yeah, he said Christians must vote, and his son has said more specifically, must choose between the two, the Republican or the Democrat, not go third party. And I think he's right. I think Christians have this, really have the responsibility to vote and to make a choice between the two top candidates based on the issues. Franklin Graham has been very clear about it. Billy Graham seems to agree. And I've been saying this all along. I think we need to look at which candidate most aligns with our views. And Graham, Franklin actually said we might have to hold our nose when we vote.
And I think we know exactly what he's talking about there.
And I've been saying the same thing. And we may have to do that, but we have to make a choice that's most closely aligned with our Christian principles and putting those into policy.
Hmm. Billy Graham, let's just pray that he has a few more years on this earth. We just love
that's
the
right,
guy.
Good wisdom. Right?
Amazing guy. So we will, we'll see how it all unfolds. Have you got your clothespins ready to go for your nose?
I've had to hold my nose and vote more than one time.
Given your background in politics, I'm guessing that's been the case. So you probably know a lot of things that the average person doesn't know about certain,
right?
Because you got the insider's track. All right, Dr. Kent Kaiser, the first debate we found out is probably coming up in 3 weeks. We shall get some analysis from you after that debate night, see how Hillary and the Trumpster, I haven't called him the Trumpster yet, that's going to be his new nickname, how they do in the debate setting, and if there's any sparks that fly.
That's right.
All right, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Hey, if you see one movie this weekend, make it Ben-Hur.
Oh, yeah.
Great Christian message.
Definitely. We talked about that with our friend Adam Holtz last week, so definitely put that on your list. Good suggestion,
Kent.
Okay, thanks.